handle the truth.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Somebody felt compelled to hire a lawyer.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Come up with this independent study language. Insert it into a contract that Kyler Murray signed.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Who ordered the independent study code red?
Earlier on the show, ESPN NFL insider Field Yates. Former NFL executive Joe Banner. Still to come. Creator and host of Somebody Feed Phil, Phil Rosenthal. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air right here on NBC Sports on Peacock and NBC Sports Audio Sirius XM Channel 85, this terrestrial radio network of friends and families and affiliates from coast to coast, the Odyssey app. We are thrilled always to be joined by our podcast listeners. And if you miss anything, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. For all of that good stuff. Chris Brockman, we had a news update prepared right now, but it's being preempted. And preempted by a Kyler Murray press conference that, based on all accounts on the old Twitter machine, was impromptu.
Mm-hmm.
He's had enough of people talking about the independent study clause in his contract. Once again, Kyler Murray getting what I thought was something he deserved, being generationally enriched after just 3 years in the NFL, which has been something reserved for a select few.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, most recently, right? And it's dicey, because if I'm not mistaken, Goff and Wentz got new contracts real early too, and we all know they wound up getting traded. But it helps the team to get in early too, because right now Josh Allen at $45 million a year, as Joe Banner, our second hour guest, pointed out, is kind of an annually paid basis bargain right now. And so get in while the getting's good, and Kyler Murray got in while he could after just 3 years, and he still hasn't won a playoff game yet. But we saw the terms of the contract. On an annual basis, he's second best paid. Joe Banner said of his money from the first 3 years of his new years on new money on the contract, it's a terrific deal. And again, he is incredibly talented. And as I said, it was his turn to get paid. And if you think that he's not worth it, too bad. That's the way it works in the NFL. And now the pressure will be on him. And that's the way it was until we learned about an independent study clause in his contract that I've never heard of in any contract for any athlete, let alone one that you're paying $160 million guaranteed to, right? Or, my gosh, where it basically said he's got to 4 hours of every week that they play a game, you know, get on a team-issued tablet with no other second screens. Can't play video games or watch TV shows. I mean, it's literally expressly put into a contract in black and white that you must prove that you are studying outside of the building on the game team-approved tablet with no second screens. It's stuff that I tell my children, like, hey, you're on your iPad. You can't watch TV and the iPad at the same time. Get off of one of them. Choose one. You know, and if you don't do your homework, you don't get your allowance.
Or dessert.
In his case, dessert is a guaranteed contract, right? And so I said, you know, it's time to grow up is the phrase that I used for Kyler Murray, because with this information, along with a quote that he told the New York Times last year, that he was blessed with cognitive skills to just go out there and see it before it happens. So I'm not one of those guys that's going to sit there and kill myself watching film. I don't sit there for 24 hours and break down this team and that team and watch every game, because in my head I see so much. So with that quote, on top of a Sports Illustrated cover talking about how athletes and video games are becoming one and the same, He's playing video games on the front cover of Sports Illustrated. You marry it all together, and that's why I had the take that I had. Well, the pushback is beginning. Zach Ertz backing his quarterback's play, saying, I don't see he doesn't know our offense or the opposing team's defense. I don't see it. And I'm sure that's what you'll hear nonstop from his teammates. And his coach basically said, I don't feel the need to have to monitor any of my players outside of the building study time. They're professionals. They know how to get ready. Well, we knew Kyler was going to talk. And he stepped to the podium, and this is what he had to say on all the talk about his independent study clause in his contract.
To think that I can accomplish everything that I've accomplished in my career and not be a student of the game and not have that passion and not take this serious is almost disrespectful, and it's almost a joke, you know. I'm flattered. You know, I'm honestly flattered that y'all think that at my size I can go out there and not prepare for the game and not take it serious. It's disrespectful, I feel like, to my peers, to all the great athletes and great players that are in this league. This game's too hard to play the position that I play in this league. It's too hard. And I don't do this often. I don't talk about myself, but today I feel like I have to. And so I'm going to list the accolades. You know, to go 43-0 in high school in Texas. Some are going to say, oh, it's high school, that's cool, but nobody else has done it. Go to college, win the Heisman. Get drafted number one overall to the NFL. Get drafted number 9 overall to MLB. But again, no one's ever done it. Offensive Rookie of the Year, 2-time Pro Bowler. And, you know, I'm not 6'7", 230. I don't throw the ball 85 yards. I'm already behind the 8-ball, and I can't, you know, I can't afford to take any shortcuts, no pun intended. But you know, those things you can't accomplish if you don't take the game serious, if you don't prepare the right way. And you know, it's like I said, it's laughable.
Okay.
I mean, that was awesome.
That's a great answer.
He's right.
I detect no lies.
Yeah, he's right.
I understand that. I totally get him saying that it's disrespectful, because it is. But it's in there, and he signed it. Why? If everything was fine from management's point of view, then why did they write it? And again, my bro, who is the best lawyer I know, he's like, the language in there is blunt. It's blunt, so there's no ambiguity about what the team is looking for, which is you're studying extra time. So the question is why was it in there? And Kyler Murray was asked if he feels it was disrespectful for it to be in there and get out.
Ways to watch film, and then, you know, of course we all watch film. That's not that doesn't need to be questioned. But it's, again, I refuse to let my work ethic, my preparation be in question. You know, I've put an incomprehensible amount of time and blood, sweat, tears, and work into what I do, whether it's football or baseball. You know, people can't comprehend the amount of time that it takes to do 2 sports at a high level in college, you know, let alone do it, you know, be the first person to do it ever at my size. It's, like I said, this is... it's funny, but I, you know, to those of you out there that believe that I'd be standing here today in front of y'all without having a work ethic and without preparing it, I'm honored that you think that. But it doesn't exist. It's not possible. It's not possible. So that's all I have on that. If y'all want to talk about football or
Are you mad the team put that in the contract? That,
like I said, if you want to talk about football?
Are you mad at that? Football.
Anybody got any more questions?
So he's done talking about it, and that's great. Now it comes time for him to play. I'm telling you, he's now officially one of the top 5 with most pressure on him, although he's made in the shade on his contract. Why was it in there? That's all I'm, you know, why is it in there? I honestly had zero thoughts about his work ethic after he signed that contract, and then this contract clause comes out, which means the management team had to feel compelled, the owner or whomever, had to feel compelled enough to task the lawyers to come up with this language. As you all know, I've been involved in many negotiations recently. And the back and forth is tiring. It's tiring and it wears on you. It's just like, can we get this thing done? You know, I want to stay and I know you'd like me to stay. So can we just come to something fair and just put on a piece of paper and let's just be done with it? Because it's a waste of your time and it's a waste of mine. Let's go. So that had to sit there and it had to be in front of Kyler Murray and explain to him, you signed this, and he might have been just like, I'd do this anyway, no big deal. Until this stuff comes out. Why was it, that's all I want to know, is why was it in there? Because when they signed this contract, what did I say? My first opinion was he deserves it.
He deserved it, yeah.
Okay?
Good on him.
Right.
Right.
He deserves it. And what are the Arizona Cardinals going to do?
Well, you let him walk.
You're going to let him walk? Right. And so they're not going to let him walk over this, but they definitely wouldn't, it seems, sign it without this clause in there. Which is why I said what I said. And yeah, I do think he's that incredibly talented. He is that incredibly talented. That's why the Cardinals bounced their draft choice 10th overall from the year before and bounced their coach. They went and done their coach so they can get a coach who could be paired with him and set him up for success. But something happened. And then when that happened, I just went back to this quote from the New York Times and came together, and that's where I said what I said. So now I just want to know why it's in there. And even Joe Banner, just to revisit what he said in hour two, that sticks with me. He said, like, tying this to the bonus money means nothing because for that to actually really stick, you have to cut him. Like, that's the play to actually make this whole thing stick. And you're not going to cut him ever. So why have anything in there? Like, what is the purpose of it? What is the purpose? Like, how did it happen? And why? Of course we're going to sit there and think his work ethic is less than if the contract that you signed for your money is including this from the team. So now it's all been answered, asked and answered. He's done with it. Now he's on to football questions. I think he handled that expertly. If he had handled his moment at the Super Bowl before being drafted that well, I thought he clearly had a plan on what he's going to say here, and it was well crafted and terrifically delivered. And so you could see he was bothered by it, but he said it with a smile on his face. So now comes the what next, and it's on his shoulders.
Yeah, now just go win.
That's now it is. Now just go win.
That'll get all of us to stop talking about it.
Well, I mean, we are done talking about it. I mean, we'll make some independent study gags every now and then.
Yeah.
And
I just mean, like, more questions about can he get it done?
Well,
late season, you know, kind of faltering, getting injured.
And, you know,
things like that.
But he is still going to have to turn on his team issue iPad. Like, they're not taking the clause out just because it was an embarrassment for everybody. Like, he's literally going to have to do that.
Yeah.
What do you think happens? Let's say he gets to 3.5 instead of 4 hours. What are you going to do?
Nothing.
Does he get fined?
Nothing.
Does he have to sit out the game? Like, so?
No. Like, they're really going to start messing with his guaranteed dollars because he hasn't hit those 4 hours? That's the whole point. It's not enforceable. And what are we doing? Like, why did it happen?
Right.
How did it happen? And he signed it. I'm sure at some point, as I mentioned earlier, like, they hire lawyers to do it, and thus it's in front of the agent who then has to explain to Kyler what's in there, unless he's just like, tell me, what are the money? What's the money? What's the dollars? Is it good? We're good? And sign it. And he doesn't read the rest of it. Is it ready for signature? And sign it. Did he not know it was in there? Is that possible?
Well, then that's on his agent.
I don't know. But did he not know it was in there?
I mean, I guess that's
because
Joe Banner said,
everybody reads every contract. They all do. All general managers want to read it. Every agent wants to read it so they could study up on what's in there. Maybe they could use this. Maybe they could use that. They know that guy's getting that. So my client comes up. I know you're giving that to that guy. So my client comes up in a totally different, maybe same team, different team, but same division. Hey, what's fair is fair. That guy gets it. That's what I want. What do you think? Kyler Murray just magically got that much more annually than Deshaun Watson?
No.
Just out of just like, you know, Eric Burkhart threw a dart at a board? No, he read Deshaun's contract. So when that's being put in a contract, you know it's going to get out. Man, a 30 for 30 on this is going to be great.
But are NFL contracts like an inch thick, you know, 20,000 words, or is it, you know, or is it a sheet of paper, or is it like the iTunes thing where we just like scroll to the bottom and click accept?
Well, that could have been the way this happened. That could have been the way this happened.
Hey, let me sign. How much? What's the dollar number?
A lot of it is boilerplate, but a lot of it is also specific to a team.
Right.
Like this one. Man, if I was Kyler Murray, I'd be like, get that out of here. You want me here or not?
Right. You want me to sign what?
But he signed it, and now he's offended by it.
This is the business we've chosen.
Indeed. Indeed. Let's take a break. Everybody Loves Raymond is this man's show that he helped put together in front of this country and just is iconic, a television show of all time. And now you can see him in season 5 of his hit show on Netflix, Somebody Feed Phil, available right now on Netflix, all season 5. But coming up next, available in studio, is Phil Rosenthal. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Back here on our terrestrial radio outfit with Phil Rosenthal. Somebody Feed Phil is
right.
In
it's
season
confusing.
5 right now. Somebody Feed Phil, available now on Netflix. There's also a book version that's coming up and a podcast that I want to get to in a second. But how do you choose where you're going to go eat on your show, Phil? Like, do people pitch you? You got to try this spot.
You know, they do. In fact, tourism boards are calling us, like, come here, film here, because the show's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So they want us to feature them.
Right.
I'm happy to do that, but we do a little research, which anyone can do.
Yes.
That's my message to the people is, you can have what I'm having.
Yeah.
We all have the phone. You can Google best restaurants in Oaxaca and see what they got.
Right.
And then you cross-reference. Never just take one reference, right? When you're going somewhere, you got to cross-reference.
Yes.
So my show is one now source for you.
No question.
To check it out.
I know. So what spot has been the most exotic that you've been to in your
life? That was one of them, but you know, it's not every day you get offered iguana.
Right.
And then there's but Bangkok was exotic for me. Marrakesh was exotic, right?
Yeah.
And there's some things in the world that, you know, a lot of people don't eat. It's not that kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the adventurous type. In fact, the way I sold the show was with one line.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm exactly like Anthony Bourdain if he was afraid of everything.
And so they bought the show, and that's what you've been doing for 5 seasons now.
Exactly.
On this show.
And the point is, if a schnook like me can go outside, maybe you can too.
So what is the most outside your taste alley that you've ever been? Like,
that's one of them that you
iguana,
just saw. Yeah,
right.
That's one. But we did a show in Hong Kong on the old PBS series.
Yes.
There was a PBS series called I'll Have What Phil's Having right before this. And I ate something called the thousand-year-old egg. Mm-hmm. It's not really a thousand. It just tastes that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an egg that they bury in the sand or the underground, and they cover it in lime and ash, and it kind of hard boils on its own after a few weeks or months.
Oh, my God.
When you cut open this hard-boiled egg,
yes.
The white is a brownish orange, and the yolk is a bluish green. And this was on the table with a bunch of other stuff at a hot pot restaurant, which is fantastic.
Yes.
I didn't realize you're supposed to take a tiny sliver of this thing and drop it in as a kind of funky seasoning. And there was a woman at the table who was Chinese who said, I'm not touching that. I said, I'll tell you what, you taste it, I'll taste it. Mm. And she was so tentative about it. I said, oh, come on. And I popped the entire half an egg in my mouth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I'm hilarious, Rich. And I turned every shade of that egg. And you hear on the soundtrack, you hear laughing. It's my brother, the producer, behind the camera.
Yeah.
Laughing because I'm going to die now. And that was, I think, the worst thing I've ever eaten. I didn't try the iguana or the beetles, but that was close. I have had to eat a couple of bugs here and there because it's part of the, you know, in Tokyo, I had an ant. They told me, you got to try this ant because it tastes like lemon. I said, oh, in that case, may I please have some lemon?
Because you don't have to eat the ant.
Exactly. If it's lemon we're after, how about some lemon instead of bugs that I have to eat? And they said, you got to try. And the woman I was with said, you know, it's really good and you should taste it. And I pick up this ant.
Yes.
That looks like a black carpenter ant that you would chew away at your picnic.
Yes.
And I put it in my mouth. This is not, I'm a Jewish guy from Queens. I'm not eating bugs.
I'm a Jewish guy from Staten Island.
Come on.
And I'm with you, man.
Yes.
I am way with you. I'm a guy who, when I was in, you know, my dad was a French teacher. May we rest his soul.
Yes.
And he would go on trips with his high school class around the world in French-speaking countries.
Yes.
And we went to Paris. I went to Paris as a kid. And all I had was peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Oh.
I didn't taste a damn thing there.
And now?
A hamburger now, you know what I mean?
No.
Like, I don't really go outside my...
Will you come with me somewhere? Can I turn you on to some things?
I
not bugs, I promise.
Okay.
Because I'm with you in that.
Somewhere between peanut butter and jelly and a moving beetle, we can find that sweet spot is what
I think
you're saying.
So. You eat a steak.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Of course. Oh, yeah. I shouldn't
paint
myself that bad. Yes. Well, I mean, my wife and I just
Chinese
went to Italy.
Food.
It was amazing. Yes. Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Italy's my favorite.
Okay. Italian food, right? Like if you had to choose.
I love it.
That's the winner.
Listen, they eat some things too. Like there's tripe carts in Florence.
Yes.
Where they pull out the sheet, it's a stomach lining of a cow, and it comes out of the cart like this, and you go, oh no, and it smells like, you know, bad cheese.
Uh-huh.
No, thank you.
The tripe cart.
You got
it.
It's
not like the Good Humor truck that came around the neighborhood.
And they slice it up and put it on a roll.
Oh my gosh.
And that's their hot dog. You know, that's delicious to them. Anyway, I bite this ant.
Yes.
And damn, if it doesn't taste like somebody put a drop of lemon on my tongue.
So it was.
So I'm like, okay, now to questions. What do you base these in lemon? No. This ant, not every ant.
Yes.
This particular ant.
Yes.
In this particular part of the forest in this part of Japan.
Yes.
That tastes like lemon. Who the hell discovered that? I don't know.
Somebody very hungry. Desperately hungry.
Famous saying, it was a brave man that once tried an oyster. Right?
I've never heard that phrase
before. You're going to eat that when you look at it? Not
no,
really,
no
but
way.
Now I love. Do you eat them?
No, I don't. I've got texture issues with an oyster.
I understand
that's my problem. I got texture issues with food. I didn't try mayonnaise until I was 21.
Okay, but I get it.
It's true.
I get it. No, I get it.
What are you laughing at? It's the truth. What, the way I said it? Is that what you're laughing at?
It's just a weird way of putting it.
It's the truth.
Yeah, I get it.
I had problems with it. I have texture. Now I have no problem with it. But
now you have no problem with
zero
it.
Zero problem.
See, now you're grown up. That's what I'm trying to say. That we grow up and our tastes literally change. So
yes.
I tell people,
yes.
Even if you hated this thing earlier in your life, try it now. You're going to see a difference. Like, I couldn't eat beets when I was little. Now I can eat them. Now I like them even.
Now look at you. Phil
What's
Rosenthal.
What's your favorite? Wait.
Yes.
Before we go.
No, we're not going.
We're not
going anywhere. I was resetting for the radio audience.
Do it.
Phil Rosenthal here on The Rich Eisen Show. One of the brilliant folks behind Everybody Loves Raymond, which I definitely want to talk to you about.
Sure.
As well as currently Somebody Feed Phil on Netflix right here on The Rich Eisen Show. You have the floor again, sir. Now that
I have a question for you,
okay,
sir.
What's my question? What's my answer for you? What do you got?
Best stadium
yes.
food. What's your favorite stadium to eat it? Because you go to a lot of games.
What's the best stadium food?
And then I'll tell you the worst stadium food I've ever had.
I don't know if it exists. You know, like all these newfangled stadiums have.
Like SoFi, I thought was very delicious.
I don't know about that one, man.
Wow.
I don't know about that.
Have you been in the fancy part?
I have been in the fancy part. And I
thought it was like a great Vegas buffet.
Let's just say I prefer the football teams more than the food there. What's yours then? I don't have one. I really
don't have one. This is unusual for me.
There's nothing that stands out.
You don't go to
the dessert cart at what's formerly known as Staples, now crypto.com. The dessert cart's there.
Oh, when they wheel that into your thing, into your suite?
I haven't had a candy apple since I was 8, but they even those look great. You know what I mean?
The dessert cart at Staples is second to none.
That's a good one.
It's good,
second to none.
Okay.
But we went dessert. It feels like a party when that comes.
Does. Yes. Correct.
Yes.
Right. Ice cream sundae, whatever you really
want.
Yeah,
we went dessert, not entree, but what's the worst? Right.
Worst stadium food,
yes.
And don't write to me, write to Rich,
yes.
Is the Dodger dog.
By the way,
it's a shanda in my people's language.
I was about to say, it's heresy to say this in this town.
I know.
But I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you.
You and I can make maybe change things. I mean, the Brooklyn version is at least an all-beef dog, and that's grilled, and that's better.
Well, you're talking about Nathan's, right, from back in the day?
Is that what it is?
Like
I mean,
right,
I don't think that's what they use.
No, not here, right. No, go ahead. But yes.
Nathan's is, you know.
Yeah, it's top-notch.
The best. Grace Papaya. I mean, we know things.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But the Dodger dog, how did that happen? How did that limp, skinless, wet noodle of bologna.
I think I've got the answer.
How did that become the thing?
I don't have to look it up. I think one time, back in the 60s, okay?
Yeah.
When the Dodgers were beginning to really win here after they came here from Brooklyn, they were really established.
Yeah.
I think Walter Alston accidentally sat on it for 20 minutes. And somebody was very hungry. He got up from the chair and they just ate it. And ever since then, it's been a delicacy. That's the way, like, they're flat. You know what I mean? Like the bread is stuck to the
taste bad. By the way, limp. A hot dog has to have. What's the most important thing when you bite into a hot dog?
A snap. Yes. I gotta get a snap.
The Dodger dog is like a limp.
It's
unfulfilled
it's a
promise.
You're shaking your head, Jason. See, because you're.
I love those.
Yes, I know why.
Why is
why?
That?
Because when you were a kid and your daddy took you to the game, it triggers that core memory, like a Pixar movie.
Okay,
is that right?
All right, that's fair.
But it's the world's saddest Pixar movie is that friggin' hot dog. People, it's the first 10 minutes of Up. Of all the problems in the world, can we solve this one?
I don't know, because everybody here in this town swears by it. Like what you were saying right now. I know. That is a heretical thing to say here in Los Angeles, California.
I'll take it, because prove me wrong.
You know, I find it interesting, Phil Rosenthal, that you're such a foodie and you love food and you love eating and you obviously are just a delight to talk to and be
Thank
around.
You.
Why did Larry David not want to have lunch with you and curb your enthusiasm? I don't
because
understand what
the
that's
opposite
about.
Personality.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I'm annoying. To someone like him,
so
up, excited, let's go.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. What are you bothering me?
Right?
That makes sense.
Like I'd be his friend in 1 minute. Why? Because he's hysterical and I want to, you know, laugh. Yeah.
Yes.
He doesn't have friends like that. What? Like, you want to go have lunch? He would say, what's the point? I was at a party with him once. By the way, everything out of his mouth is an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
No question about it.
I met him. Have you met him?
I have.
Has he been here?
He has been sitting in that chair multiple times.
Okay. So he doesn't like being here.
He says he does, though, Phil. He says
he doesn't. Trust me. He's not a people person. He can be pleasant. He can turn it on for you.
Okay.
But trust me, when he got on, he goes, I had to do that thing. I meet him at a party.
Yes.
This is like 15, 20 years ago. I meet him at a party.
Yes.
First words out of his mouth. I say, hello, it's so nice to meet you. He goes, not hello. You think it's all right to throw gum in the fireplace?
That's what he says
to you. I'm like, that's an episode right there. Put that, right?
Did he throw the gum in the fireplace?
Of course he did. And then he worried about it.
That is an episode of Curb.
Absolutely.
So how did you come? Did he bounce that idea off you? Like you come on the show and we try to have lunch with me and then I show up wearing a MAGA hat to get
That's
out
right.
of it?
I thought the MAGA hat, I thought that would be dated. You know, maybe you don't do that bit because who knows? Who knows? Months from now, the show's not going to be on for almost a year. That'll be dated.
Right.
Yeah, sadly, it wasn't.
Nope.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
How did you meet Ray Romano? When did you ever cross paths with him?
We were set up kind of on a blind date. I had seen the Letterman show that he had done. He'd been trying to get into on the Letterman show for like 12 years as a comedian.
Right.
And from his 1 6-minute appearance on that show, Letterman said there should be a sitcom for this guy. Letterman had a production company set up at CBS
to
do stuff. Uh-huh. And so they set about looking for people to create a show for this Ray Romano fellow.
Right.
So when I got the video cassette in 1996 of his appearance, I said, yes. Oh, I saw that when it was on. Sure, I'll take that meeting. And we met for lunch and we kind of hit it off. For every story he had about his crazy Italian family, yeah. I had one about my fakakta Jewish family.
Right.
And we just, you know, that was it.
So it was a lunch.
A lunch
where you met, and then you mapped
Art's
out
Deli.
And at Art's Deli,
where
every
sandwich is a work of art.
It's a work of art.
That's
I've heard
saying.
About
yes.
that. Yes, and so you mapped out what Everybody Loves Raymond would look like. Is that what it?
We had no idea what the show would be, but if you and I met for the first time,
yes.
and we were going to work on a project, I'd just say, "Tell me about yourself." Just getting to know you. If we had lunch,
right?
Where are you from? What's your family like? And he starts telling me, "I got twin boys and an older daughter, and I got my parents live close by, and they was bothering me, and I got my older brother's always jealous of me. He saw my award for comedy, said never ends for Raymond. Everybody loves Raymond." And I said, "Well, it doesn't seem like there's anything there we can use."
Except all of that.
Except
and
all
the
of
title.
It. And what I didn't know about the characters, their personalities, I filled in with my family.
Is that so? Who from your family did you bring to the equation?
Pretty much the parents. A little bit of me in him, because I don't even know him very well. A little bit of my wife. Yeah, stuff. All the stories. 90% of every single thing you saw on that show over 9 years happened to me or to Ray or to one of the other writers. If you work for me, your job was to go home, get in a fight with your wife, come back in and tell me about it.
That's a show.
That's the show.
That's a show.
It's kind of the way, you know, I have to say, the way Larry goes through life and says, you think it's all right to throw gum in the fireplace, and then sees if he can get a show out of that.
Right, that's right? a whole
so
idea.
So his observations, whereas mine is character, personality, relationships more.
How did you cast it?
My God, so many stories. I wrote a book about it. It's called, I'm not here to sell books,
please.
Except for Somebody Feed Phil the book, which is coming.
Right.
You can pre-order that now, but I wrote a book right after Raymond was over called You're Lucky You're Funny, How Life Becomes a Sitcom.
Yes.
So it's about how you can take what's crappy in your life and maybe turn it into something good, like a sitcom that runs 9 years.
Yeah, like and is generationally brilliant. So what's your favorite story of casting it then? Obviously, you've got Brad Garrett, you have Peter Boyle, you have the whole rest of the crew.
I think the best was we looked for the mom.
Mm-hmm.
It was very specific. I was writing my mom, and there was a key scene in the pilot about how I gave my parents the Fruit of the Month Club for a holiday gift.
Yes.
And I got this phone call. Philip, what did you do? There's over a dozen pears here. How am I going to eat all these pears? And I said, well, give some to Dad. How much fruit can your father eat? Please do me a favor. Don't ever send us any more food again. I said, well, there's another box is coming next month. She said, what, more pears? And I said, no, a different box every month. She goes, every month? Oh, my God, Max, he got us in some kind of cult. I can't talk anymore. There's too much fruit in the house. She was hysterical. So I thought, let's put it in the pilot. This will be a good demonstration of how crazy Ray's parents are, right?
Yes.
And we had the women audition with that scene. And in comes Doris Roberts, who was just, there was no one who got it like that. Because right away I recognized my mother. That's it.
Boom.
When you write very specifically,
yes.
When you talk specifically, I'm sure you found this in your years of doing this.
Yes.
The more specific you get about details, the more universal it becomes. That's how people's minds work. We all have specifics. So even if yours isn't mine, if you were to start talking about a play in sports that you love, I don't know anything about sports. I'm not good at this like you, but I'd relate to it because I get the obsession. I'm obsessed about something else.
Yes, you are.
So we understand the feeling of it.
That's fascinating.
Becomes relatable.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
And so Doris Roberts says that's my mom and she's hired.
Had specifics.
Boom.
Yes.
That's amazing.
And she was, you know, she won 3 Emmys for the role. Yeah.
Spectacular.
Spectacular is right. She was amazing.
Phil Rosenthal here on the Rich Eisen Show. Somebody feed Phil the book. So that's where all your books can be acquired on October 18th. It's coming out.
And
this is a recipe book based on what you've eaten.
Not just
the film,
recipe. Or? It's behind the scenes stuff, stories and things like that. Photos behind the scenes. And then 60 of the most requested recipes from the fans of the first four seasons of this show.
Okay. And then there's a podcast, Naked Lunch, coming.
Naked Lunch.
What's
yeah.
that? What is that that's currently airing right now?
It's out there right now. We had Elaine May. We had Patton Oswalt is out today. We have a lot of great people. By the way, I just heard your interview with Andy Richter.
From yesterday.
Yeah. And he's going to do ours too. And I think I have to thank you for airing his Fabio story, because I think I need that.
I think that means mashed potatoes and peas.
Yes, yes. Don't give away the rest.
The rest of it is so funny.
They should listen to your podcast on him and then mine for a repeat of that story, which I will insist on.
Fantastic. You should do that. Somebody Feed the People. What is that, Phil?
Oh, that's a charity that I started when I found that people were having to wait on long lines to vote. So I arranged with other organizations like Pizza to the Polls and World Central Kitchen to feed the people who have to stand online to vote. And then after the elections, I thought, listen, people are hungry everywhere,
right,
not just when they vote. So we keep it going.
Which is beautiful. That's great. And more information can be found at philrosenthalworld.com. This has been a delight, sir. I appreciate
you
coming to El Segundo and moving your lunch club to something centrally located so you could appear on this program.
It's exciting for me to have that lunch that's coming up.
Okay.
And it's exciting for me to meet you. We can go eat whenever you want.
Do you share Ray Romano's fascination with the New York Jets, or that is
I do not. Well, we did share the fascination with the New York Mets of 1969, and we did an episode and reunited them. Almost everyone but Tom Seaver came.
I missed that one. I swear.
You can check it out on Peacock.
So all of them showed up minus Seaver? You did that?
Exactly.
With?
I mean, Ron Swoboda, Crane Pool, Tommy Agee, Cleon Jones. It was phenomenal.
That had to be incredible for you.
Tug McGraw. Come on.
I remember. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it was. We almost cried.
You had to. Of course.
And they were so much fun. They were having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Art Shamsky.
The great Art Shamsky. Ed Crane Pool. Was he there too?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So you and Ray share the Mets, but him at the Jets is all by himself.
That seems crazy.
And you're definitely not crazy. I love it. Everybody check out Somebody Feed Phil, available on Netflix. All five seasons available right there. Somebody Feed Phil, the book, is available wherever you get your book, starting on October 18th. Check out the latest episode of Naked Lunch, which is currently airing, a weekly talk show podcast where all podcasts are acquired. And check out more on Somebody Feed the People at philrosenthalworld.com. Did I cover all the bases?
It's enough with me already.
Very good. Thank you for coming on here.
Thank you, Rich.
Phil Rosenthal here on the Rich Eisen Show. We are back with more on the world of sports in a moment.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. All right, what else is going on out there, Christopher? Anything going on out there?
I will say something really weird on Jeff Passan's Twitter right now, about 30 minutes ago. So He
wasn't hacked again, was he?
I'm not sure, because he posted a tweet that said he's very happy for Mike Tollin, who produced The Captain and Last Dance.
The great Mike Tolan, producer here.
So he's taking over operations of the Northern Colorado Owls, which is a Pioneer League team.
Okay.
Right. And then he has a second tweet under that that just says, announce Soto. So I don't even know what that means. Is he saying like Mike Tollin to announce the Soto?
No.
Like, what is going on there?
I don't know.
Did he meant to text that to someone and he accidentally tweeted it?
I don't know.
Like, it's kind of like,
can't be the most important sports story that's going on.
I mean, it's got 8,000 likes.
Of course it is, because everything that Passan does
love
is
ambiguity.
They also love Passan. you know, passing. Everybody's trying to figure out what's going on with Soto, and it says announce Soto. That's it.
That's all it says. The tweet is announce Soto, but it's underneath, like it's a like it's a secondary tweet to his original.
You know,
the
one that about Mike Tolan. Maybe like an accidental draft or something that you sent out and didn't.
I don't know. All right, Deshaun Watson
there
is doing.
That's just a little bit more germane.
He's doing quarterback drills right now.
It's just crazy.
The Mary Kay with a video.
It's just crazy. I guess you got to keep. I mean, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
You keep on keeping on, thinking that he's going to play. I mean, if he gets zero, he's out there week one. Deshaun Watson versus Baker would be off the charts in a week one situation, but I don't think he's playing this year before Thanksgiving. How does that sound?
That's 12 games?
That's 12 game suspension. That's three quarters of the season.
That's tough for a man who hasn't been arrested or charged with a crime, though, right?
He has not been charged with a crime. He has just been sued. He's been sued civilly for many different cases, including people who do accuse him of doing criminal things. So, and behavior that is beyond bizarre. But you don't get suspended for bizarre behavior, but you do get suspended for predatory behavior, which is what it appears he was undertaking on occasion. But what I'm saying, though, is for you, look, just the football aspect of this thing, you got to prepare Jacoby Brissett, right? You got to give him as many reps as you possibly can, right? Don't you?
I would think he'd be getting all the reps, but
I mean, because the Browns otherwise. We don't really talk about the Browns otherwise. I mean, Amari Cooper's sitting there.
Nick Chubb.
Miles Garrett is your defensive player of the year candidate from the Cleveland Browns.
And they have Clowney, too, still?
I believe they've got Grant Delpit, who's getting ready to roll, too. You know? That's another guy, if I'm not mistaken, who could have been on my list of most impactful players returning to injury. So...
All right, we've got Baker Mayfield and DJ Moore for a touchdown.
There you go.
We got Tom Brady hit Julio Jones for a touchdown in practice. We got video of that surfacing on the
You know what we should do? We should have a fantasy draft for training camp.
Okay.
A fantasy draft for training camp.
Talk more to me.
And I don't know who's going to be in charge of aggregating all of the live tweeting of practice.
Oh, DJ Moore dunked it over the goalpost.
That's
too.
A flag. So, do you know what I mean? Like, if you had Tom Brady in your training camp fantasy league, you're killing it. And you got to take people you know are going to get the most snaps.
Baker in 7-on-7 red zone, 3-for-4 with 3 touchdowns to DJ Moore.
Well, that's it. There you go. It's over. I'm calling it over.
Over already? I can't get enough of these stats.
I'm calling it over. Here's something, man. So the LIV Tour isn't. We're all looking to see if Barkley emerges from Trump's golf course.
So it's in Bedminster, New Jersey.
If he doesn't get an offer by the end of the day, he's out.
That's what he said. Oh, here we go. 49 minutes ago, we got something. They haven't offered me a contract. They asked if I was interested. I said yes.
So nothing's changed from between now and his conversation with Dan at the top of the week?
Doesn't seem like it. My sponsors are concerned. He's obviously with Subway, Capital One, and Dick's Sporting Goods. So,
wow.
Nothing's changed.
Like I said, I mean, to drive past 9/11 families protesting... and he says he's got sympathy for them. It's probably the worst day in the history of our country. It's the truth. Trump said nobody's gotten to the bottom of 9/11, unfortunately, and they should have. Did he not read that commission? The book's like that thick, by the way.
He definitely didn't read it. What do you say?
Good Lord. The LIV Tour getting Bubba Watson as well, right?
That's the latest rumor. Not confirmed. But confirmed. That's the latest rumor, yeah.
I mean... Let's talk about our guy. What did Mark Hubbard do today?
Oh, my gosh.
How about our guy? Is he going around with the Not Rich Eisen bag?
I saw somebody else on there earlier. I think he's kind of doing every day. He's kind of changing.
Oh, he's changing?
Changing the whiteboard that's on his bag. But Rocket Mortgage going on in Detroit right now. And our man Mark Hubbard, you've never had a hole-in-one, right, Rich?
I've never seen one.
Never. You haven't done it, and you haven't seen it.
I have not stood on a tee and watched a member of my group hit a hole in one. I have not seen that. And the only thing hole in one I've ever seen or heard that was right, it was at a Jimmy V golf tournament in Raleigh. I was on a tee box on a par four, and another group was on a tee box just across from the cart path.
Okay.
On a par three, and they were going nuts because Bob Huggins had just aced. That's as close to seeing an ace as I've ever.
Amazing.
And as you know, I've been playing golf for a long time.
So Mark Hubbard currently 4-under, T17 right now after his first round of Rocket Mortgage, thanks in part to this shot.
Oh, we're going to see it. From Golf Central.
He's not liking that one. Anytime you hit the club leg go so early.
Oh, my God.
Oh, get in the hole one time.
Not like this. Not like this.
Oh, full. Now, I say this with all due respect to our friend Mark Hubbard. Does the ace count when your body language is indicating that you're so upset?
You hate the shot.
Al Michaels, you know that there's something called a Sandy when you get up and down from a bunker.
Yep.
He told me that he says that there's Al once told me there's a Sandy up and down from a bunker, a Barkey when you get up and down after hitting a tree. Yeah. And then there's a moany when you moan hitting a shot.
And then it goes
It goes in, or you get up and down after moaning hitting a shot. That's a moany ace.
That's a moany ace right there. Yeah, he hit it and was like, no, please no, oh no. And then yes! It was like
and then he was like kind of embarrassed that he was moaning about it.
I mean, he dropped his club immediately. Like, it's never a good sign. Mark Hubbard,
it still
since
counts.
Appearing on our show, is on a tear.
How about this? Since we started talking about him on this show, that's the bump.
Yes.
Yeah, you go ace. You go acing. Then you get rid of your golf bag with the duct tape on it. That's all.
RES Consulting.
There it is. Not Rich Eisen. It was on his bag. But keep it going, Mark Hubbard. Keep it going.
Keep it going.
All right, our Friday show. We'll tell you about it when we come back on Peacock. For everyone else, we will see you then on the radio.